Phil, there are so many great television shows and movies.
That's right. Thank goodness Resonance Rewind has the team to analyze them on a personal basis with Robin Pierce, Jenny Bill, Jessica Burtis, Alex Lefchuk, and some key additional guests from the Temporal Nexus.
Aren't you one of those key additional guests?
No, I'm the Temporal Nexus.
George and Sherry Vicker, architect David Vincent, and of course the mysterious Mr. Nexus. A quartet of quality, or a more sinister take on the human race? Let's find out in another Resonance Rewind. Professor Crater! Professor Crater! Oh, no, it's Robin Pierce. Robin, it's time for you to run the Pierce slide rule of quality over Vicar, of course, an episode directed by the same director who directed the pilot episode of Hawaii 5-0. And that's not the only connection between the two series.
Indeed, it is not, as we will explore. Now, for anybody who hasn't listened to our earlier episodes, where we did feature the Invaders, it was a late 60s TV series, sci-fi as paranoia, as a metaphor for the mistrustful times that they were actually filmed and set in. You know, the good old times of the 50s, the heartening glow of World War I was over. We were becoming a more troubled, rebellious, and protesting state. And we were becoming very mistrustful of just about everybody. And thus came the Invaders, which on a previous episode, I kind of flippantly maybe described as Invasion of the Body Snatchers for television. But as producer Alan A. Armour described it, they're here among us now, in your city, maybe on your block. They're invaders, alien beings from another planet, but they look just like us. Take a look around, casually. No sense letting them know that you're suspicious. The new neighbors across the street, the substitute teacher, the all-too-pretty secretary in husband's office. Any one of them might be an invader from outer space. How can you tell? Sometimes their hands are mutated, the little finger jutting out awkwardly. Sometimes, rarely, they will begin to glow when they're in need of regeneration in order to retain their human form. And always they are without a pulse or a heartbeat, for of course, they are without a heart. Now then, this strange glowing thing is the phenomenon seen by a luckless telephone lineman when he's installing something or other in the manufacturing plant of much decorated war hero George Vicker, played by Jack Lord. Now, what he describes and what makes the tabloids is somebody glowing in flames being put into a tube. This, of course, arouses the suspicions of David Vincent, who is the only person to have actually seen a saucer land. Except nobody believes him. And he is on the run from the invaders because they know that he knows. And he, in turn, is at war with the invaders, trying to thwart every single plot of theirs he comes up against. So he investigates and under an assumed name, manages to talk his way into a job as a chauffeur for George Vicker's alcoholic, troubled wife. She's already been caught drunk driving twice, so she is in need of help. Under this cover, David Vincent goes into the security building where he finds that the alien incursion is further along than anybody knows, and the invaders, here represented by Mr. Nexus, as played by Alfred Ryder, have made a deal with a somewhat embittered war hero, and they're using Vicar Industries, Vicar Manufacturing, as a hub. Let's take it from there.
And it opens up a whole new range of things. Thankfully, we have been joined by other fellow Resonance or Rewinders, one in New York, where I believe she's actually wearing shorts. It's unbelievable. But there we are. Pamela Suman, I know you're ready for Pink Flamingos. It's all right, only a matter of days before Pink Flamingos is released. And that'll be a whole new exciting thing that the world can look forward to if they haven't already caught the wondrousness of Pink Flamingos on previous Midweek Drive shows. So welcome, Pamela. Jessica Burton has connected as well from the joys of North Carolina, where she's also enjoying the sunshine, basking in the sunshine, it would seem. And of course, Jenny is just enjoying the tropical nature of Newcastle upon Tyne, which is England, which is truly wonderful. Or maybe she's not. Maybe she's elsewhere. Anyway, Jessica, we'll jump straight to your good self, the invaders. Vicar, what are your thoughts?
I had a lot of fun with this episode. Usually alien shows can be real hit or miss for me. But this one was actually really interesting. And I always think it's so creepy is when you can't tell who's alien and who's not. And kind of that whole question of like, who's the human around? And I do think it was really funny because some of the fight scenes were really hilarious. He was like kind of bouncing around while like dramatically fighting people. But I thought it was really cool. It was interesting to see somebody from Hawaii Five-0 from last week in the show. So my parents also watched it and they enjoyed seeing him.
Yeah, a whole new take on Jack Lord, I think, in terms of this embittered war hero and the sequence, especially where he plays the gramophone record with the applause. He certainly feels as though he's been dealt a raw deal by America, which is possibly part of the motivation in terms of why he gets into metaphorical bed / spaceship with Mr. Nexus and his villainous scenarios. Okay, let's move to the aforementioned Pamela Suman. I mean, loving the alien, of course, a classic Bowie number. Did you have much love for the alien here, or did you think,
Well, you know, these things can happen, right? Especially in America, disenfranchised humans. I really liked it. I have to say, I don't know if it's because I was a good girl and I sat down. I watched it on my iPhone, but that was okay. I was glued to it. I didn't do anything else. I didn't text. Nobody's here, so it's also much easier. I have the whole place to myself, so it's wonderful. And I really got into it, and I thought that Jack Lord's makeup was much better in his hair than Hawaii Five-0. I have to say. And I thought it was good acting. I mean, the story kept me. It wasn't boring. Like, it was... I get bored so easily, and the story kept me interested and, you know, just contemplating the type of disintegration or the type of transference that was actually happening, like what was happening to the humans, who were these humans, what happened, like exactly what they were doing. There were a few holes because there were some things that I didn't quite, like they didn't add up to me, but it didn't make me bored. It just kind of, I just kept going with it. The actress, Diana Holland, or actress, I'm not sure if it's correct to say actress anymore, but she was so captivatingly beautiful, and she actually was a good actor, or still is, actress. So many questions, I don't know. But she was very good. She was holding my interest. She was believable. I really liked her. Thumbs up for me. I actually liked it.
It echoes a whole range of other factors, and we'll do a little bit of post-production with Pamela because she was sounding very quiet there. Or maybe it was just me. Maybe it's just a whole range of aspects within that. Okay, so far, okay, it would seem. Jessica has given a kind of thumbs up, as indeed have her parents. Likewise, Pamela. But we know that this can come apart like a wrecking ball that actually accidentally sees aliens effectively flare up in the same kind of redness that currently is manifested by Jenny Bill's hairstyle. But Jenny, what are your thoughts in terms of this particular sixth episode of the first season of The Invaders?
Well, I do really like The Invaders. It was one of my favourite series from the 60s, 70s, and I thought this episode actually was slightly more low-key than some of them are, but I thought all the acting was great. I mean, they had a really great cast. Everybody was good, and I thought everybody acted really well, and it looked great. I mean, the lady looked great, Jack Lord looked great, David Vincent always looks great, and I really liked the music. I thought this had a slightly predictable, but quite a good story, but they made it quite believable. Just one or two things, like Jessica, I think it was Jessica said, the sort of fight scenes and the door that went into the area and it said over the top, absolutely nobody permitted or something like that. And I had to burst out laughing because I thought, what's the absolutely, like you would actually put that. And then it was actually so easy for David Vincent to just go across the bridge and get into this absolutely completely forbidden place. It was, but you know, you have to, in TV series, you have to forgive these kind of things. Otherwise there wouldn't actually be anything to watch.
And life can sometimes imitate art as well, in terms of, as Robin earlier alluded to, I think this was a period in time pre-Watergate, of course, a good 6 or 7 years before Watergate, but certainly at the heart of American involvement, thanks to Lyndon Johnson's input in terms of Vietnam. Lots of concerns there in terms of Vietnam. And obviously, the character of George Vicar isn't a Vietnam veteran, but he is actually a Korean War veteran. And the whole aspect of the Korean War and that lack of success in many ways clearly burns within him to the extent that he kind of turns to the dark side. I mean, Robin, did you feel that Jack Lord again brought us around, I won't say a masterclass, but you know, I've had this campaign that Jack Lord is not a wooden actor over the last few years. I think this is another example of him actually doing good stuff.
When I first saw him on screen in this episode, I thought, good grief, he is wearing exactly the same suit and driving exactly the same car as he did in Hawaii 5-0, the black Lincoln Continental and the dark suit, dark tie. But you soon find that there's more to him. He's this billionaire, presumably head of a corporation, yet his time is not his own. He is at the beck and call of Nexus, of anybody on the phone who needs his attention. You know, you'd have thought that given his immeasurable wealth and power, that he would be above all that. He would have risen above all that. But he came across as very vulnerable and very aware that the buck stopped with him. And this leads me to an observation about this particular episode. Now, I've mentioned before that my problem with The Invaders, I would consider myself a fan, not a fan, is it's very inflexible. You have The Invaders, you have David Vincent. Now, for the series to go on, and it's all sort of like, you know, sort of single story episodes with no end in sight. For that to continue, nobody has to have a clear win. Nobody gets any further ahead. The aliens come up with a plot. David Vincent finds out about it, thwarts it. That's not over because there are more somewhere else with another plot. And for the series to continue, you have to maintain the status quo so that nobody is ever any further ahead. And this is incredibly restricting in a series of this type. But what they did, every so often, they threw out a real winner of an episode. And this one, I think, is one of those because of its particularly strong characterization, because Vincent himself, as he's billed, architect, David Vincent, what path does architect play into all this? Absolutely nothing, but it's the only piece of information about him other than his lousy sense of direction and he happened to park his car to take a nap where a flying saucer was landing. We don't know anything else. The guy's a total cipher. He has no background. He has no future that we know of other than fighting these aliens. And they're hunting him as much as he's hunting them. But you get a character actor like Jack Lord, who can put an extra dimension into one of the usually cardboard cutout supporting cast in these episodes. And let's face it, when you're dealing with invaders whose only difference is they might glow if they need to be recharged like a Tesla, or they can't bend their little pinkies, you don't have a great deal to play with because they come over as unemotional. So this one is in my estimation anyway, a far better than usual episode. And it really plays with the tortured psyche of Jack Lord, who comes across even in pre-Rambo days of what is essentially a war hero from a war that America never won. And he's really feeling it.
Jessica, a war that America never won. Jack Lord considers this one of his favourite roles. We've already pointed out Paul Wendkos directed Jack Lord in the pilot episode of Hawaii 5-0 as well. So a little bit of behind the scenes information there. Any thoughts in terms of the analysis we've given Vicar so far?
I mean, I think it's been very accurate. And I liked what Robin was saying about the show, like as a whole, where, you know, when you get into that like routine, it's kind of predictable. But this episode, at least I haven't seen the rest of the show, so I can't like frame it against it. But I thought this episode was captivating because I mean, it does show like one character does end up dying in the end. And I feel like Vicar, I kept wanting to call him Victor, but Vicar, I feel like he's sympathetic because, I don't know, he just has this like aura of being the classic head of the house man from the 60s, where he seems very steely and tough. And later, you know, he was talking about how he had been denied because of his the disability. And I thought that actually made me feel really bad for him, whereas I didn't really have a very high opinion of his character before then. I feel like he's not a character that swings either one way on like the morality. So I think him ending up as well being killed by the aliens was interesting, just because I wasn't expecting anybody to actually like die in this episode. I didn't realize, I know that there was like the risk of that, but I thought, you know, they would save everybody and it would be like a happy ending. And, you know, the villains, the aliens, I guess the ones that would not win, but I guess they kind of did. And I feel like that makes it a bit interesting.
Pamela, hopefully with slightly better audio this time around, but we never know if those aliens are actually at work. Again, thoughts on the production. And of course, you mentioned Diana Hyland, who plays Sherry Vicar. There was a long period of time where I honestly thought she was actually going to come a cropper. I thought she might actually be, you know, the tragic heroine and so on. But of course, there is that reverse, whereas, as Jessica's pointed out, it's actually the uncaring husband who effectively has given up on his alcoholic driving wife and has decided that's it. He's going to throw in his lot with the alien, after a fashion.
Okay, can you hear me? Yeah? No? This is crazy.
You're fine, Pamela. You just keep talking. It's a little bit quiet, but I can always fix that in post.
I can do this. Okay, so one thing. Okay, after, at the end, when he, spoiler, but when he dies, and as a wife, it seemed like she just was okay. Because you're wondering, what is she going to do? Isn't she brokenhearted?
She's inherited a multinational company. Why shouldn't she should be okay? I mean, clearly, it's all good, get the aliens out. It's a win-win situation.
But they seem to get on really well. So I thought she was going to maybe offer to be his partner and help him solve this and find the aliens, because it sort of petered off with the aliens as well. We say that in America. I don't know what it means. I have no idea over there. But So it seemed like they were just kind of like going away to take over someone somewhere else. And it was like, okay, you know, all right, well, that's, I guess that's over, you know, we're all right. We're safe. Like, I wanted to know, it just kind of went with her. I wasn't quite sure what's next for her. You know, I wanted to know, which I suppose is a good thing, but like Jessica, I've never seen this before. This was my first one. So I have no context whatsoever. And like, we were plunked down in the middle. It wasn't the first episode.
Number six.
It was what now?
The sixth episode.
So yeah, so right. So there's context and historical context to the story, which we don't
Having
have.
Said that, Pamela, as Robin alluded to, this is the days when American television, you could pretty much watch them in any order without necessarily feeling as though you missed out on something because it's deliberately made to go into syndication, although it only made 43 episodes in the end.
Right, and like unlike today where you're forced to binge watch because you know the cliffhangers are so compelling that we're all TV addicts. You know, back then, you know, you had to wait till what, next Thursday at 7 p.m. or something for it to happen.
Or in Britain, Saturday night around about 8 p.m. on BBC One.
Or dinner or tea. Yeah. Yeah. So that's just kind of what I was sort of thinking. And the guy was like, he was really good at hiding where no one could see him. You know, I thought he was.
Alternatively, as we also can point out, yes, the second season on BBC television wasn't screened until late night on BBC Two, probably around about 10 or 11 o'clock at night, basically. So you had to be a real aficionado to see the second season of The Invaders. But there we are. Strange times, strange days. Okay, let's turn to Jenny. Again, you've heard some of the thoughts there. We're going to be asking, obviously, for favourite characters. I suspect that yours will be Roy Thinnes and David Vincent's, despite Robin trying to demolish the notion of him being just a blank cipher. But share with us your summation, really, of the experiences whilst rewatching Vicar. Did you remember it from the original run?
I didn't remember that individual episode, but I remember it was a long time ago that I watched it. And if it was on at 10 o'clock at night, then you'd have to be a little bit older than I probably was then to have watched it. But I certainly saw it many, many years ago. And I do actually have the DVD set. One of the things I was interested in what Robin was saying is that actually when I was, for some strange reason, when I was watching this yesterday, it kept making me think of The Fugitive, because The Fugitive is a similar series where you have this voiceover and you have one person, and each time it's all about that one man, and each time at the end he's moving on to a new town. And basically, like Robin said with this, it's kind of starting all over again. And that is very similar, like sort of format. And I'd never really thought about that before, but it was just when I was watching yesterday, I was thinking, oh, this is just like Fugitive. yes, and my favourite character would have to be Roy Thinnes. Yeah,
well,
I've seen
Roy
him
Thinnes,
in a few.
The character portrayed by Roy Thinnes, who is David Vincent, and of course the fugitive.
Really like him in a lot of other things, and he's matured as he's got older as well. He's matured and kept on acting.
It's astounding, Jenny. We tend to do that. It's an odd human species thing, basically. I feel as though, you know, we get younger as we become more chronologically gifted. You mentioned, of course, The Fugitive, another Quinn Martin production. And yes, I think there was a hope that this might actually last that through. Of course, it didn't. And what became the SF incarnation of The Fugitive was The Incredible Hulk, another series we've looked at in times past and will return to in various sort of aspects as well. Okay, Pamela, is your favourite character going to be the long-suffering alcoholic driving wife Sherry Vicar, or are you going to throw something completely in the whole system and say no, it's obviously got to be Sam Edwards portraying Hank as the linesman who has to actually provide the convincing heart attack scenario?
I love the underdog, and I am, you know, female, and I have to say, you know, she was given no information, she was locked away in this palace, and you know, she was spoiled, but she didn't have the things she really needed to have a good life. She wanted to spend more time with her husband. She loved him. You know, come on. She wanted to actually spend time with her husband, you know? And so she was acting out. She was crying out for help. And I found her kind of captivating and very smart. And I really liked her. So it's Mrs. Vincent, Diana Holland. I actually have the names for a change. That's my favorite character.
Okay, we're over to you then, Jessica.
Oh no!
Favorite character?
That's correct. Suddenly, the aliens have taken over in North Carolina, and Jessica's actually been partially frozen. Hopefully, she will connect before the end of the program. Otherwise, we'll be left hanging a bit like David Vincent in so many ways. So I'll go back to Robin then. Again, looking at the sort of line here, Nexus escapes, of course. All other aliens are disposed of. So that's fairly neat, although Alfred Ryder, who, as I said, would go on to great fame as Dr. Crater in Star Trek The Man-Trap, and also several other episodes of The Invaders he'd appear in. But what are your thoughts in terms of the thing, and indeed, of course, two known human losses, the poor linesman whose discovery of a regeneration center first alerted Vincent to the entire operation. Clearly, they were not Wichita linemen, otherwise they would have actually known that aliens and snow and the Wichita lineman is a whole new world.
Well, with absolutely. Or without Glenn Campbell. Agreed among themselves, the Wichita linemen, with thanks to Glenn Campbell. My immediate concern, though, is about Jessica. I mean, she seemed to freeze there. Now, has anybody noticed if she's glowing orange? Does she need recharging? Mm-hmm. I will say, for the benefit of all of us, I have never actually seen her bend her little pinky finger. Has anybody? So while we deal with that, my favorite character, again, and I can't believe I'm saying this, has got to be Jack Lord as Vicar, because here he effectively portrays somebody who appears to me to have done all the wrong things for all the right reasons, and he realizes when it's all too late that he's painted himself into a corner and he's going to lose just about everything and there isn't anything that he can do about it. And I was just struck by his depth, as much as I'm struck by Jessica's sudden alienness.
The 98th episode, Robin, strange things are obviously just around the corner. Jessica, are you now back with us? You seem to have actually settled down somewhat. Now you've moved into a different area. Are we back with you with or without bent pinky finger?
I hope so. I hope the aliens are not trying to jam my signal right now. I think my favorite character is the main character, because I feel like he's just was going around like karate chopping people when he would fight them, like sneaking up on them. I just thought he was so fun just for that. I probably wasn't supposed to find that funny, but it was. So I think he's my favorite character.
And you know, I think much as I'm a huge fan of Jack Lord, I might well say that Roy Thinnes again carries the series in the way that you know, only Roy Thinnes actually can from that perspective. Okay. We now need to look at the scores, and I suspect we might not have a curmudgeonly one this week, but who knows? Pamela, what is your score for the sixth episode of the first season of The Invaders, Vicar?
I think I'm going to give it an 8, because I actually paid attention and I watched all the way through, including the bombastic music. I just went with it. And I enjoyed it. I really liked it up until the end. I was kind of like, okay, now what? But I guess that would make me want to watch it again. So then that's good. So yeah, I give it an 8.
And incidentally, how is the family viewing of season 4 of Hawaii 5-0 coming? Because you seem to actually go in with a vengeance, basically, having seen 2 or 3 or 4 episodes back to back. Is that still carrying on?
We did. We watched them, and then I lost Jerry because he went upstate. So, and then I had to start rehearsing for my show because I'm playing for the first time in over 2 years, and I realized that's a really long time. So I really can't absorb as much of other people's media right now at the moment because I'm just trying to remember lyrics, which is really
well. It's just as well you've got Resonance Rewind to help select particular choices for you, as opposed to actually having a range of almost never-ending material. Okay, an 8 from yourself. Jenny?
I think I'm going to give it a 9. It loses a point for, like, the ending, but like Pamela was saying, I was thinking, well, his wife doesn't seem to be that bothered. He's dead. And only half an hour ago, she was, like, totally in love with him and devastated because he was working so hard. And also some of the silly little things that I already mentioned earlier.
But Jenny, so, yeah, alcohol can do that to you. It can cause personality changes and switches. You can go from being, I love you, everybody, to an actual sort of cold-hearted so-and-so. That's the danger of alcohol. Never mind. This is brought to you by the alcohol-free zone of A Resonance Rewind.
I would take your word for it.
Jessica.
I think I'm going to go with an 8 as well, just because some of it was goofy, but I really liked the whole kind of idea of the aliens being similar to the Cold War with the invasion and the constant surveillance, not knowing who's an alien and who's not. I thought that was very interesting. So I actually enjoyed it a lot. So solid 8.
Indeed, looking good. And of course, music by Dominic Frontier, much known and much loved for his Outer Limits work. And there are lots of aspects of this that I think do relate to the Outer Limits, not least of which, of course, being the voiceovers, all the other sort of elements that come within that. Robin, your score.
You may not believe this, and I would advise you to strap yourselves in right now with your chairs in the upright position. I am giving this an 8.
And I'll stick with the symbol for infinity. One less than Jenny, but I think it's an 8 for me as well. I think it works on a number of levels. It connects together. And that neatly concludes a fairly uniform line of things there. Heading off to episode 99 of Resonance Rewind. Not that you necessarily need to listen to them in any particular order. But next week, I will warn you, as you watch the Deep Space Nine episode of season 4, episode 2, a show called The Visitor. If you can watch that without crying, then you are a very, very controlled individual. That's all I'll say. I think it's I've watched.
Or a Vulcan, Alex. Or a Vulcan. Kolinar, my friend. Kolinar.
It is emotional. It packs a punch. It talks about the mortality of existence. It deals with loss of parents. It deals with connecting, endeavouring to actually connect. I, again, probably over the years, have never actually failed to shed a tear every time I've caught this particular one. So there we are. It's The Visitor. It's Deep Space Nine. It's next week's Resonance Rewind. So to Pamela Suman, don't worry. It'll soon be time for Pink Flamingos across the world. Jessica Burtis, of course, in North Carolina. Jenny Bill. By the way, Jenny, I suspect you're not actually in Newcastle.
No, I'm in Sheffield.
Even more exciting. In terms of official lines that we actually range from in Sheffield to New York to North Carolina and Wales. Frankly, some people said the show would never get beyond 3 episodes. And there we are into our 98th. Robin, keep on keeping on. And of course, to everybody, keep on resonating.
Thank you.